You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, as always, Pat Lane. Tonight is episode 65. That makes it the Damian Woody episode, the Houston Antoine episode, or perhaps even the Stephen Wright episode. Great show for you today. We have the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy, joining me. A phenomenal interview, probably one of the best I've had. Just a great guy. Really kind of insightful things, and it's an interesting conversation. You definitely don't want to miss that. After that, as always, I have the 3-minute drill and this week in sports history as well. Now, before I get into the interview, I want to remind you with Eat Sleep Fantasy, eatsleepfantasy.com, go to eatsleepfantasy.com, sign up for one of their memberships. Fantasy football season's coming. You need a guy, or you need a group of guys that you can rely on to get good, solid information. Eat, Sleep, Fantasy are those guys. They are those guys that you want to use. Their memberships are pretty cheap. They start at $5. They go all the way to $120. But somewhere in the middle is kind of probably where you want to be. I think I bought the $30 membership. It gets me access to the draft kit. It gives me access to the private Facebook group. It gets me access to them answering my personal questions. That's the key, man. Anyone can be there and give you direction and say, oh, I like this guy or I like that guy. It's the personal response to your questions that's key. And these guys are great, and there's a ton of guys on the site, a lot of great writers there. EatSleepFantasy.com. If you sign up for one of those memberships, and you put in our promo code, WWP, capital W, capital W, capital P, you get 15% off your membership. You cannot beat that. So go to eatsleepfantasy.com, sign up for one of the memberships. It doesn't matter what membership you use, the $5 one or the $120 one. It doesn't make a difference. You sign up for one of them, you put in the promo code WWP, you get 15% off. All right? Can't beat that. So without further ado, let's get into the interview with Bob Soucy. All right, so we're going to welcome onto the show the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy. Bob, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Hey, Pat, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously now we're into the thick of things here with the preseason. One game in, you had a SNL opening, it looked like almost. That was interesting. Will that kind of be the theme every game, do you think?
Well, I think it's probably apropos since we're, you know, some would question whether we're the not ready for primetime players like in the old SNL days. And I thought it was masterfully edited. Ryan Connery is the gentleman who put that together. And, you know, I had certainly no idea what to expect when they told me to stand in front of a green screen and smile and throw my head back. And, you know, and then, of course, when I saw Zoe Hamm it up a little bit, on the video, and Ninkovich looked like a natural there, and then lo and behold, there was me as the third man in that opening montage, looking every bit the dork that I sometimes feel like on TV. But it was cool, you know. I thought it was fun. It was a nice light opening. It's a sports broadcast, and that's the way it should be. And I think that you know, the parody on SNL is a bit ironic, of course, because what is Saturday Night Live? It's a show that, you know, for so many years has had fun at the expense of others, often through parody of either news events and news coverage of events, or, of course, popular culture, television, movies, et cetera. So it was well done. And, you know, I think it was a good note on which to begin the telecast.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And, you know, Zoe hams it up all the time. I mean, to be next to him when he's trying to, you know, that's just Zoe. That's just Zoe being Zoe. That's kind of not fair to put you in that situation, you know. And Nick seems like that type of guy where he's very rarely serious. And so, you know, it's like it's tough to
to be asked to kind of be alongside those guys. But you held your own. I thought you were fine.
I appreciate that. You know, and I think one of the things that makes the broadcast work, at least for those who've accepted us and believe that the broadcast works, speaking of radio first, of course, and then television, since Joe and I have worked for 5 years here to four on radio together, is that we're counterweights to one another. We balance each other out. I think right. If we were both the same kind of personality, and there is only, of course, one Scott Zolak, but if I was someone who was bombastic or ultra emotional too, I think that the audience wouldn't necessarily accept the broadcast team the way it has by and large. But the fact that, you know, I can be the straight man and Zo can bring the personality and a passion and the at times over the top emotion to go with his terrific analysis and insights, well, then it works. It's the yin and the yang.
I agree with you. I do think, I mean, you're 100% correct on that. And I will say, although Zo sometimes, like you say, is way over the top and sometimes can be bordering on goofy, you know, the insight that he brings, he knows what he's talking about. So it's not like schmuck in the booth, you know what I mean? And so that gives him some leeway for sure, which is good, because that's one of those things where if you're going to be over the top like that, you have to then be able to back it up with some actual information and not just be like, well, you know, I saw this and then I'm watching it saying, what are you looking at? Like, you don't see what the heck is going on. And Zoe can almost, you know, because he played quarterback and because he's watched the game for so long, he sees things that a lot of people miss and can kind of talk about those things. And it does make it for an interesting, you know, an interesting take and an interesting look through his eyes.
No question, Pat. And I think, you know, even the quarterbacks who were in the booth, there are a lot of them. And I know because on Sundays when the network TV crew is announced to the public, you'll see a lot of social media reactions that are not too favorable for former quarterbacks in the network Blazers. Right. And in Scott's case, you're right. He is a quarterback and he sees the game the way a quarterback should, but he's also able to articulate it so that the listener, or in the case of last Thursday, and of course this coming Thursday, the viewer understands, you know, through his eyes and words, you know, why something happened or why it didn't happen. And I'll give you a very small example from the game on Thursday against the Redskins. Philip Dorsett is running a pass pattern down the right sideline. It's very early in the game, and Brian Hoyer throws a deep ball, and it sails incomplete into the Redskins sideline. And at first blush, you think, oh, that's a terrible throw, or it's a throw that has no chance to be complete. It was well covered, but it's really a case where both players were somewhat complicit in addition to the good coverage. And that Zoe tells you that as a receiver, he's got to run that route a little more inbounds. He's got to give Hoyer some space to fade the throw toward the sideline and give himself a chance to make a catch while still in bounds. And it's that kind of a subtlety, that kind of a nuance that often goes unnoticed. I think a lot of guys get caught up after a while of the same old broadcasters speak, and that's true for play-by-play guys, and I know I've fallen into that trap. But with Zoe, I think the great thing about his analysis is that it's fresh. It's born out of his experience as a quarterback, as you say, and being around some great coaches like Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, of course, during the course of his playing and broadcasting career. But there's also an honesty there too. You know, Zoe and I are the Patriots broadcasting team, and anybody who listens knows that we're getting a lot more excited about the Patriots doing well than the opposition, and we're going to sound at times a little bit dejected, if not a lot so, if the Patriots don't pull one out, like in Super Bowl 52. But the thing about Zoe is it's an honest analysis and his credibility when it comes to both teams. He will criticize the Patriots at times. There are times when he will say, I don't know what Tom Brady was thinking on that throw, as in Super Bowl 49 when he throws the interception early to Jeremy Lin in that game. And then, you know, you mentioned, the analysis and the over-the-top stuff that at times takes place. The good thing about that is it's authentic and it's organic, for lack of a better cliche, in that Zoe is passion. He speaks with the voice of the fan, but also with the voice and the knowledge of a longtime NFL player. And so I think you get the best of all those things when you listen to our broadcast and hear him, because the fans who are listening to the Patriots broadcast team, who are Patriots faithful, they want to hear their guys react the same way they feel, or at least they want to hear Zoe do that. And that's exactly what he does. But at the same time, again, he balances that out because he gives you really insightful, honest analysis. And I think Nate brings a lot of that, those same qualities, and there's a freshness for him. I thought he was almost a natural. And I say almost only because I know he put a little bit of time and effort into note-taking before the broadcast last Thursday, but he's got a great personality, good sense of humor. He's an intelligent guy and, again, knows the game. So we're in a situation on television now where you've got a guy that knows offensive football extremely well and a guy that knows defensive football extremely well. And better yet, if you're a Patriot fan, and in particular someone who's really fascinated by Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels and their approach, well, then you've got two guys that know inside and out the way the Patriots do things and why they do certain things.
Right. Well, I agree with you. And, you know, honestly, I mean, you're the team broadcast. So we expect that, you know, as fans, we're sitting here expecting that from you guys. We're expecting, you know, the emotion, and you obviously going to be more excited than others. But like you said, you guys aren't afraid to criticize the team. And obviously, you know, you're not going to extremes, but if there's a play you disagree with, you're not going to just gloss over it. You're not just going to not talk about it. You'll approach it, and you'll approach that subject, and you'll say, yeah, you know, I don't know what he was thinking, or I'm not sure what that was, or what was he doing there. And it's things like that that I think separate you guys from other people, because to me, that's lacking in some of, you know, when you talk about team broadcasts, obviously you're not, you know, the CBS broadcast where you're doing a different game every week. You guys are with the Patriots, and so clearly you're going to have some bias towards the Patriots. But the fact of the matter is that with that comes that honest analysis, like you said, and that's, it's hugely important, I think, for the fans to hear that, because they know, yes, obviously you care about the Patriots, but you're also not just like a honk and agree with everything they say and do, because that's not valuable to anybody, you know? So I think you guys provide that, which is really good. And that's important, you know?
So, and I'm glad that you react the way that the broadcast reaches you in that way. I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you have credibility as a broadcaster and you have to be honest. Not naturally, right. It's, you know, we're biased. As I said, we're partial. We see things through the Patriots lens and react that way. But nonetheless, if a bad call goes in favor of the Patriots, we have to say that, because why would you believe me if I told you all the time, well, the Patriots are getting jobbed by the officials, but never criticize the officials when the Patriots catch a break and the other team, you know, really got
exactly
robbed in that situation. And same thing with great plays and bad plays. In my case, having played the game at a high level, I try to let Zoe be the analyst and offer the opinions and really be critical when it comes to the X's and O's or the execution of particular plays. When I feel like I have a license to be critical is when someone does something that's really an egregious mental mistake, a personal foul, right, that you know is committed not in the act of making a play, but after the whistle sounds, and it's just a foolish act. And I would point to an example in the AFC Championship game several years ago. Brian Storick, after a first down run by Steven Jackson, you know, headbutts a guy for the Broncos and gets called for a personal foul. It's a drive killer in essence. And so that's what I'm going to say. That's a foolish play. But I'm going to let Zoe tell you, you know, the right tackle didn't do his job on a particular play, and that exposed the quarterback to getting crunched, et cetera.
Which makes sense. And that's, you know, just like Bill says, do your job. And that's your job. And you try not to stray out of it. And I think that makes sense, because being good at your strengths is one thing, but also knowing your weaknesses is another thing. And that's just as important as being good at the things you're good at. So let's move on.
No question about it, Pat.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Do you enjoy the preseason? I mean, do you like doing preseason games? I know it's a little bit, you know, maybe not as, and obviously now it's a totally different set of circumstances, and we'll talk about the TV thing, but do you enjoy doing preseason games?
I do. And I try to remind myself, even after, you know, 5 years now getting ready for game two of the sixth preseason that I've called. You know, what it was like to call regular season minor league baseball games at the Class A level for so many years before sparse crowds on hot, humid afternoons in, you know, late July or early August, or cold, frigid nights in early April or early May. And, you know, we're given this privilege of calling, we're guaranteed at the start of the season, 20 games, and four of them are in the preseason. And when you think about it, what we're paid to do and having the opportunity to be at the NFL and to work under the conditions in which we work, having been on a long road that involved a lot of bus trips overnight in the minor leagues baseball, or calling even college football while at the Naval Academy, and sometimes going to places like Monroe, Louisiana, and some of the other you know, smaller venues that Navy on occasion would play in. Yeah, I try to remember what those experiences were like. And, you know, I do value the preseason reps, number one. I think it really does help me prepare for the start of the season. I don't, at this time, call many other sports in my role with the Patriots. There was a time when seasons overlapped for me, and I was broadcasting play-by-play year-round. Now, you know, this past year, for example, I called a college basketball doubleheader after the Super Bowl, about a week or two after the Super Bowl. And that's been it since, you know, that's the end of last football season until the start of this preseason. So I value the reps and the experience, but at the same time, you know, I also look at it in context and try to have the perspective of, you know, how lucky we are to be where we are and do what we do. And, you know, you see shots of preseason crowds. And I was thinking about this watching a replay and critiquing the game the other night. You see fans that are in the stands that might not be there for regular season games. And by that, I mean a lot of families, a lot of young families, young kids. And because a lot of season ticket holders decide not to go to the preseason game, so you have a lot of families that turn out. And I think about how special that experience is for them. And I had a situation last week where I left some tickets for a friend of mine who brought his young son and then his nephew who was visiting from France. And throughout the night, they were texting me pictures and what a great time they had. His young son, you know, was enthralled and in awe. His nephew was fascinated with the cheerleaders in particular. But whatever it was, what a thrill that was for them. And I was thinking about, you know, the scenes that we were seeing on the telecast again and watching it back, thinking, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of us might complain about, you know, these preseason games and say, oh, quality football stinks, or, you know, who are these guys? We're going to watch guys that aren't going to make the team. But then you think about, like, you know, the young people that are there for the first time to see a Patriots game and just to see Tom Brady on the sideline in uniform and what that must be like. And then, of course, you look at the players themselves and how valuable, how important, what a tremendous opportunity each and every one of those games is for guys who are chasing their dream. And even if you're the 89th or 90th guy on a roster in the preseason and you don't get a chance to play extensively until the fourth preseason game, and you know, essentially, as a viewer, as a fan, that, you know, the guys you're watching in that fourth game, they're in all likelihood not going to make the team. But you think about what that opportunity represents for those guys that are looking for another shot, maybe hoping to get a chance on a practice squad somewhere, or maybe get an audition with another team, and what that opportunity means to them. And I think that's something we all have to keep in mind.
It's so true. I mean, I actually took my daughter to the first game when it was her first game ever as a 7-year-old, and she had a blast. And it's funny, we actually got on the Jumbotron, and I've been going – I've had season tickets since 2000, and I've been at pretty much every game, and I've never been on the Jumbotron ever before. And like first quarter of the first game she's at, we're on the Jumbotron. It was awesome. You know, she had a blast and she had so much fun. And we're planning to leave at halftime, and she was like, no way, we're sticking around. And we ended up winning, obviously, and she just went nuts. And I sit in the end zone, and I actually sit in the end zone that Grissom returned almost return the fumble for touchdown four. And she was going crazy and jumping up and down and screaming. And it doesn't matter to her that the game doesn't count. Like, she doesn't know. It doesn't make a difference. She's just happy to be there and see the team in person. And, you know, it's, you know, when you put it in perspective like that, it is a cool thing to be able to do. And even for, you know, for families, the games are cheaper now, which is nice. So you're able to afford the tickets to kind of go and spend a little bit less money because it's so expensive to go to the game sometimes, you know? And so it is an opportunity for them to kind of see those things. And yeah, again, maybe Brady's not playing the whole game. You know, this week Brady seems like he's going to play a little bit. So you'll see him maybe only for a quarter, but so what? It doesn't matter. It's just the fact that you're there, you know? And like you said, those young guys, I mean, you really get an opportunity to shine, and not only just for the teams, but also for the fans to see those guys. And I do want to move into two of them in particular, and I want to see if there's anyone else that you wanted to draw attention to. But Juwan Bentley and Ralph Webb, I mean, I thought really showed out. Bentley, I thought, played great at the middle linebacker spot, and he kind of moved around a little bit at linebacker. But I've been excited about this kid since he got drafted, you know, 3-year captain at Purdue. I just like the intangibles, and it seems like he can play. So we'll see. And Ralph Webb just had, obviously, a phenomenal game at the end, had the great catch on the 2-point conversion, which, yes, he might be playing against backups, but I don't care who you're playing against. That's a heck of a catch and a stretch for the end zone. And so, you know, now whether there's a spot for Webb on the team or not, I don't know. Bentley, it seems like, probably has a good shot of making the team just because there's not a ton of depth at linebacker. But I thought for those two guys in particular, they really showed out in that first game. Maybe talk about them and if there's anyone else that you kind of noticed that caught your eye.
Pat, I would totally agree with you, certainly with Juwan Bentley, and as well the catch on the 2-point conversion by Ralph Webb. But first, I want to take a step back and add that Bill Belichick arrived in 2000, Tom Brady was drafted in 2000, and you became a season ticket holder in 2000. So now the Detroit game is complete. So I think that you should take credit for as much as you can for the success the Patriots have enjoyed since you signed on as a season ticket holder. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I actually mentioned that in a previous episode. I was talking about kind of how, and I'm glad you're on board. So I got one person on board with me here and a pretty important person, I would say. I think the wheels are turning here. You never know.
Yeah, you helped to get this juggernaut in motion, and I jumped on for a ride well into it. I think you hit it spot on with Juwan Bentley. It's fascinating to me, like, to think about, you know, the draft night and Nick Caserio when he was running down the draft picks from that final night and talked about the guys they had taken. And he was telling us, you know, you're going to like this guy. You're going to like talking to this guy. And he, you know, singled out Bentley as a 3-time team captain, like you said, and the intangibles. And you go and you watch video and you listen to some of the interviews that he had done at the time, whether it was while with Purdue or in the draft run-up, you know, that you can find on YouTube. And, you know, this guy's really impressive. And then, you know, you start reading into the draft profiles, and a lot of the descriptions of Bentley were very similar to one another. Tackling machine, a thumper, guys, you know, pretty good, as a linebacker against the run, or maybe somebody who plays well straight ahead, but lacks the ability to cover or play in space. And I'm drawing off the top of my head or off my memory, you know, some of the things that we read about him in the immediate aftermath of the draft. And, you know, in practice, honestly, the last couple of weeks before the game against the Redskins, he was someone who I didn't really notice a whole lot of. Christian Sam, who was drafted right after him, was the guy that was supposed to be the special teams contributor who ran well and was more of an athletic player while at Arizona State. And it seemed like in practices, and I've heard other guys say the same thing, that he was showing up more than Juwan Bentley. But I will tell you this, and I thought initially, okay, with a little skepticism, maybe this is just a whole Purdue pride point of view. Rod Ninkovich said, you're going to like this guy. This guy can play. Yeah. I'm telling you, this guy's got a great chance to make the team. And sure enough, he goes out, and the play that, the officials inexplicably whistled dead for ruling that forward progress up the top, he punches the ball out. And then you see him make some other plays. He makes a tackle to keep the receiver short of the sticks. And that's, force the Redskins to come up shy of the first down. Then, although Washington would score on the next play, he makes a tackle in which he shows great patience at the goal line, and he's calling the defense. He's out there with a green dot. And then after the game, in the practices to follow, including the last couple of days, he's out there repping it with the ones, getting into the mix, wearing the green dot, communicating the defense, and you think, okay, this guy, he's got not only a great chance to make the team, but he's going to be a guy who could really contribute. And I think about the competition between, for example, him and Landon Roberts, if it comes down to that. Now, Landon's been a good defender against the run, plays in the Patriots defense as a guy that, he kind of fires out like a missile sometimes, and he makes some thunderous hits at times, but then other times when he doesn't guess wrong, then he's overruns a play. I mean, talk about shooting gaps and whatnot, and then at times has struggled in coverage, as we know, and so I think, okay, he's also a guy that, and I'm not trying to take anything away from him. This is nitpicking. Because overall, by and large, he's been a good player, especially where he was drafted coming out of Houston, and someone who did what Bentley's trying to do a couple of years ago. But Bentley's a bigger version, and he has shown thus far the ability, I think, to move laterally, certainly as well as, if not better. And so maybe he's a guy that, becomes that next linebacker behind Van Noy and, of course, the main guy, Hightower.
Of course, yeah.
And then when it comes to Ralph Webb, one thing I will have to say.
Oh, Bob, can I stop you for 1 second?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. One more thing about Bentley I forgot to mention. He came out, and I blogged too on the side as well as this. And one of the things that I noticed about Bentley is that Pro Football Focus rates all of the college players along with the pro players as well. He was overall the number 2 rated linebacker in college football last year. And so that's not just, run defense. That's not just pass defense. That's an overall look at the entire package. He was the number 2 ranked linebacker by Pro Football Focus last year. So, you talk about a guy who just drafted in the 5th round. A lot of people are questioning his lateral mobility and everything like that. But Pro Football Focus looked at his tape and looked at what he did and contributed. And, they're the analytical guys looking at all the different sorts of things. And they came up with him as the 2nd best linebacker in football last year at the college level. And so I think, even though it didn't get heralded quite as much, but that's something that's kind of flown under the radar. I haven't really heard anyone talk about it, but that's something that could definitely make an impact, where you look at it and those guys are usually pretty much right on the money. And so they have this guy rated so high. And so obviously there were some very positive things about it. And again, we go into camp thinking there's a lot of questions about this guy. Who knows? And he comes out looking great. And it just could be like almost like a little bit of a clue that maybe we missed something along the way. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, Patrick, the thing about it is, and we talked about this with Nick with regards to Ralph Webb. I mean, there's game speed and then there's the speed that, one clocks on a stopwatch in the 40-yard dash. Who runs in a straight line 40 yards other than maybe, somebody on kick coverage or, of course, if it's a receiver on a fly pattern? The game is played on the field where you have to move east, west, north, south, often reacting on the same play and moving in different directions and anticipating. It's like an outfielder who has a lot of speed but gets bad jumps, doesn't read the ball coming off the bat.
Yeah.
What I saw from Bentley, especially in that goal line situation, what others pointed out, is somebody that had patience and vision. And what we've seen, from him, again, a very limited sample size, though, someone who can not only understand the defense as a rookie, but articulate it and communicate it to his teammates. And that's really quite a testament to his football acumen. Hightower talked about it, said he's a sponge. He's always looking to learn. And again, as a 3-time captain, that speaks to his character and, the quality of person and leader that he is. When I look at Ralph Webb, another guy that, seems to possess a lot of intangibles, and another guy who maybe got knocked a bit because of a lack of blazing speed. How does he play in the game? And now, granted, he was out there running behind a pretty veteran, experienced offensive line by preseason standards. You had some guys on that offensive line who were a bit of NFL journeymen, you know, two or three guys that had been with a couple of different organizations, plus Teddy Karras, and they blocked well for him. I thought Ryan Izzo, the young tight end, draft pick, seventh rounder out of Florida State, did a terrific job on a couple of blocks on scoring runs. But Webb, to me, he showed as much, if not more, on a run up the middle where he spins out of an ankle tackle and maybe picks up a few yards where he should have been tackled behind the line or at the line. And then you mentioned the catch on the two-point conversion. I don't think that he was recognized as somebody that could be a factor in the passing game coming out of college. And we're not going to see into these James White. But that was a heck of a play to reach down a bit behind him, make that grab, and then in stride, you know, turn and dive across the goal line again for the two-point conversion. It's a very athletic play, and it's a tough catch for a running back to make, especially. Tough catch for anybody, but especially, I think, a running back or a tight end who's coming out of the backfield in his case. So I was really impressed with him overall. He's a long shot. There's no doubt about that. But you look at the situation with Sony Michel on the shelf right now, with Rex Burkhead having sat out the last couple of days of practices as we speak.
Yep.
And with Mike Gillisley, somebody that, you know, contractually, he's got to beat out Jeremy Hill. And Hill, I think, has a leg up after that first preseason game. And based on what we've seen thus far in practices, you know, maybe he's on the cutting block, if for no other reason than the economics of it, with a guy like Brandon Bolden, who's got that core special team experience and all the intangibles that he brings as an experienced Patriot. Now, maybe at the start of the season, a guy like Ralph Webb has a spot. Just in terms of a need to you know, fill the void until some of those guys come back or at least can contribute more fully. And even if that's not the case, I think he's someone that probably could get through waivers and get to the practice squad and be someone that continue to develop. But he's a very impressive young man coming out of Vanderbilt, all time leading rusher at a good school. Again, solid credentials off the field, and someone who I think really made a great impression. And he shows a wiggle today. I was watching the practice and had an opportunity, he did, to get some more reps. And cutting, the wiggle in open space, you see some things there. He's not Deion Lewis, but you know, he certainly has some ability.
Yeah. No, it's good. We'll see. And like you say, I mean, there could be a spot, there may not be, but he could squeeze through to the practice squad, even if there isn't a spot right away. You know, definitely an interesting guy to keep an eye out, at least for the next three games, to see what happens. So now let's move away from the field and kind of into the booth a little bit. Now, your preparation obviously is a little bit different for these four games because you're going to be on television as opposed to radio. Two things, really. I'm wondering what you take into the booth with you as far as, you know, prep work, and also anything that you might be doing differently, you know, now while you're on, where you're on TV, as opposed to, you know, when you're on the radio, instead of like, I mean, outside of like wearing sweatpants and, you know, a polo when you're on the radio, you might have to dress up now, obviously, but, you know, is there anything that's changed in your preparation?
Well, we have the good fortune of being probably the best dressed radio team because we have an outstanding men's clothing store that sponsors our broadcast. So I always found it interesting that the great people at Mr. Sid and Newton Center outfitted the radio team because nobody really could see us on television. But you know what? Now it's an opportunity for them to shine too, and they got a lot of pub during last Thursday's game because Nate, Zoa, and I all sported their clothes. But yeah, you know, it's funny.
You guys are good. Yeah.
Well, we owe it all to Barry and Stu Siegel and Mr. Sid. But, you know, when you talk about preparation for me, it's funny. I try to prepare for radio broadcasts and just as I would for a television broadcast in terms of the amount of notes and information that I have at my disposal. My main, you know, cheat sheet, if you will, or instrument with which I work during the game is a large poster board size spotter's chart, or depth chart, if you will. And it is folded in half. And so when you look at it on the one half, the upper half, you'll have laid out by position according to the depth chart. For example, the Patriots offense. On the bottom half, you'll have the Redskins defense. you flip it over, and you have the Patriots defense on the bottom against the Redskins offense on top. And essentially, I have a box for every player with the vitals from height, weight, you know, hometown, age, how they were acquired, first round pick, waiver claim, free agent signee, to their relevant statistics and some biographical notes. And I try to do that for every player who's on the roster, make sure that I have enough information if I need it. Most of the time, you don't. We use a very small percentage of that information during a radio broadcast, especially. But, you know, if the right guard gets hurt or, you know, somebody goes down, then I can at least talk about Tyler Catalina, who played at Rhode Island before he transferred to Georgia. It happens to be a, you know, native of Holden, Massachusetts, because the camera's on him, and it's his homecoming game, and he got hurt for the Redskins. So I try to have as much information at my disposal as possible. I also have some other notes that supplement, you know, the individual player notes. They could be trends, rankings, anything that I think, you know, might have some relevance. His series history. I have a separate folder that I keep with me that has the special teams players, a kicker, punter, return man, and notes and statistics on each of those guys, but also includes, you know, key stats for both teams, the coaching backgrounds of the head coaches, the organizational history. For example, the Redskins, as a three-time Super Bowl champion with Joe Gibbs, the Redskins have fallen on hard times, and you might have some information about the last time they made the playoffs, or in the case of Jake Gruden, he's the first coach under Dan Snyder. He's the eighth head coach Snyder's had, including one interim, since 1999. He's the first to reach his fifth year as the head coach. You've got all these different nuggets. Jeez. And, you know, a lot of it is just minutia that's at your disposal. Right. And again, very little of it gets used. And I try to go into the radio broadcast as well as the home broadcast the same way, with that same kind of information. As I say, the radio broadcast and the television broadcast the same way. And it's a week-long routine, and it starts right after one game ends, and you start to collect information on that particular game. You call through the box score, and you make notes and highlight key plays, or, you know, who played however many snaps, and you look at, you know, the drive chart, and how many three and outs, so time of possession, anything that you think might be worth noting, you highlight it or circle it with a red pen, and you go back to it as the week unfolds. And then I get online, and I read newspaper stories, I check various websites, I watch the highlights, and you start taking notes in the first few days. You build those spotter charts with the depth charts for each team in my computer, eventually to be printed out at the end of the week and taped together on that poster board. And I'm watching video. I watched yesterday, for example, I watched the Redskins and the Steelers, at least a part of their preseason opener. I'll continue to watch it tonight and tomorrow as well, as we speak on a Tuesday night. And by the end of the week, you know, it's hopefully a situation where you've put it all together, and by entering all the data yourself, and you hope that it's fresh in your mind by the time you walk into the broadcast booth. And
yeah.
Again, the game tells the story. The game dictates how much of it or how little of it you use. And with a guy like Zoe, he talks a lot, and you know, he fills so much time that, you know, a lot of it is unnecessary. But at the same time, you know, you want to have it just in case you need it. If a game gets into a blowout or you know, something happens, like I say, an injury to a player, you want to have some information on that particular player to share. With the one difference I will say, though, about television and radio, from my standpoint, with regards to all that prep work, is that we have production meetings, and Zoe and Scott and I will sit down with the producer, and we'll go over some key storylines. So maybe, you know, as we sit down on Wednesday afternoon before the Thursday night kickoff, and we're talking about some of the things we want to cover, maybe I'll gear some of my research and preparation toward those particular topics. Right. How many receptions and yards, for example, of the receiving corps did they lose last year with Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola leaving via trade and free agency? Because topic number one in our open the other night was the wide receiver position. So if I needed it, I had stats available toward that end. But I love the research part of it. I love the homework part of it. The one thing I will say that's challenging in the NFL is just the volume of information. There's so much of it out there that, you know, often that's the most challenging part is determining, like, what should you use? How do you be efficient with your time of preparing it all? And, you know, what's relevant to this game? You know, Tom Brady has so many milestones, so many records that he's on the verge of reaching every time he takes the field. But, you know, you try to narrow it down. What's really the most important? And sometimes for you know, a quarterback or a coach or, you know, a team in general, it's trends against the opponent, series history. And, you know, those are some of the things I think about in putting all that information together.
I think it's great. I mean, again, like you said, you may not use all of it, but to be that prepared and to go into it saying, you know, I'm going to have all this stuff in case I need it. And it's very Belichickian in a way, because, you know, we all know the stories about how Bill has practiced all these ridiculous things. And, you know, Dan Conley almost returns a kickoff for a touchdown against the Packers. And, you know, lo and behold, film comes out and they've practiced that in practice. And it's just like they practice all these things that, you know, are interesting situations that don't normally come up, and yet they're prepared for it in case they do. And, you know, same thing with you. You're saying, hey, look, I know Zoe does a ton of talking. I know I don't typically use this, but regardless, I'm still going to bring it to the table just in case it's there, just in case I need it. There it is for me to go to it. And I think that that's an important thing, you know, for you and for the listener, really, to be honest with you, because you can fill those things if you have to. So I think that's important.
Well, that, I think it goes back to, you know, a work ethic. And that's too, that it seems work. You know, people put more time and effort into their fantasy football teams than I do in my broadcast to realize that. Or, you know, betting a card.
There are some people that say, well, that no may not doubt, speak about you,
No doubt about it. I understand that. But, you know, I think the big thing is having an approach that, you know, you don't want to fail because you weren't prepared. And the classic line that I've heard, and it's actually one that Vin Scully, the great baseball announcer, coined from the actor Sir Laurence Olivier. Scully has often said that the key to broadcasting, and it's the same thing that Olivier said about acting, is that you have to have the humility to prepare and the confidence to pull it off. Well, you prepare out of fear. You prepare out of fear of not being, you know, not being ready for the game. And so you don't want to be embarrassed because somebody tuned in, but boy, this guy didn't do his homework. You know, and you know, I've been in that situation before where, you know, maybe I mispronounced somebody's name or, you know, got something wrong. Not that it's because I didn't put the effort in, but you want to give yourself as little an opportunity as possible to make mistakes like that. And so the best way to do that, to avoid those mistakes, or at least to try to, is to do your homework. And again, I love that part of it. And anybody that I know in this business who's had any measure of success does the same thing. And it's something I learned in my minor league baseball days, college football, college basketball. It's something that I recognize in so many of my counterparts as a general rule. You know, you don't get to this level, but even at lower levels, you know, without being prepared for the moment. And, you know, when you don't put in that effort, then it shows. And also for me, Pat, to be honest with you, one of the things I determined when I was fortunate enough to land the opportunity to follow the great Gil Santos, I realized, you know, you don't have his voice, and you're never going to be, you know, someone who people listen to and are just raptured by the sound of the voice. Gil, the great Gil Santos, had the classic football broadcaster's voice, and I think the perfect voice for football, and was so good and enjoyed such, you know, tremendous success and longevity and left such a legacy that one of the things that I determined is that if I fail in this, if I don't succeed in trying to succeed Gil, not replace him, but to establish my own career here, by following him, I don't want to be because I didn't put everything I had into it. And I think that's one thing that you hear from players. You don't want to leave anything on the field. Well, as a broadcaster, you know, in my case, especially given this great opportunity, I didn't want to look back and say the reason I didn't have any staying power. The reason why, you know, I didn't earn a second contract or a third contract is because I stopped doing the work. That's one thing you can control. It's like hustling up the first baseline in baseball. You know,
makes sense.
That part of it's not a skill. You know, it's just effort.
Yeah. I will say to you, to your credit, I know Gil, it's impossible to replace Gil, and not just, you know, I think it was the voice, but it wasn't just the voice. It was the way that he was able to convey things. And I mean, honestly, for us Patriots fans, the moments for us in, you know, in our lives and, you know, their call of Vinatieri's game winning field goal, whoa, forever give me chills. I mean, I'm getting chills right now just thinking about the call. So, you know, it's impossible to replace that. But what you've done really well, I think, is you didn't try to replace him. You went in and said, I'm not Gil Santos, and that's okay. I'm Bob Soucy, and I'm going to do it the way that I'm going to do it. And I think you've developed, you know, a voice of your own as you go along. And I think that some of the calls that you've made are, I wouldn't say just as memorable, but pretty darn close to just as memorable. Some of the great calls that you've had as well. And I think that, you know, you've really gone into it saying, I'm not Gil Santos and I'm not trying to be Gil Santos, but, you know, here I am and this is me and this is what I'm doing. You've kind of left it all out there. And I think you've done a great job. And so, you know, I mean, obviously you're here on the podcast. I mean, what else am I going to tell you? But I really do believe that. So,
well, I appreciate, you know, that. And I'll tell you what, it, excuse me for interrupting. Yeah, it's really heeding the words of Gil Santos, because one of the things Gil told me before my first broadcast in the 2013 preseason were these exact words. He said, listen, just remember, there are going to be people who don't like the way you do it because it's not the way I did it. But keep in mind, there are going to be people who like the way you do it because it's not the way I did it. And his point was, just be yourself. Do it your way. Go in there and have fun, but be yourself. Don't try to be me.
Yeah. No, I think you've done a great job of that. So, all right, before I let you go, I got two last questions for you. I know you did about 20 years of minor league baseball, including the Paw Sox. Did you, I suppose you probably had to enjoy it a little bit. What was your favorite part about that, or your favorite place or team that you did?
I loved it. I mean, I loved calling baseball. I love baseball. It was really my first love in sports. And it was the sport that I thought I would reach the major leagues in until I started really getting serious about football and thought that I had some ability to call football. But yeah, you know, it was a long ride through the minor leagues, literally and figuratively. And there are so many memories that I savor. And a lot of times I didn't realize it at the time, Pat, because I was so determined to get the next job and try to move up the ladder from A ball to AA to AAA. And it's funny though now, because I think back on it, like what I cherish the most are some of the relationships that I developed in those years in various places. You know, whether it was in 1995 calling Peoria Chiefs games as a Cardinal affiliate, the manager Roy Silver, who I've become close to. Just how well we got along and how much I enjoyed that experience. And what I enjoyed most about it were the nights after home games before his family arrived from Florida and school got out for them. The nights we would spend in his office after a game, talking about the game, talking about baseball in general, talking about life, just, you know, anything that was topical. And there were times we would sit there and you know, thanks to Anheuser-Busch's association with the Cardinals at the time, and you know, there would be a refrigerator full of beer and not that we got sauced, but you know, you'd have a couple. It'd be like going to the bar with your buddies to watch a game or after a game, you know, and just sitting around and telling stories and learning about the game and learning about people. I can think of so many different times during the course of my minor league journeys where I had experiences like that, getting to know people that, you know, were real grinders as players, as coaches, as managers, that, you know, I respected and developed friendships with, the experiences of seeing some of the great baseball players, you know, who, you know, were just kids. You know, not that I was an Alex Rodriguez fan as a Yankee by any means, but I remember when he was and Appleton Fox in the Midwest League. And he came to Peoria, and he's out there playing catch. And he's playing long toss at old Minden Field, Pete Finucane Stadium in Peoria, Illinois. And the cliche, man amongst boys. This was a boy. He was a kid. He was a teenager. But he's out there, and he was a man amongst boys. And then when I called the Delmarva Shorebirds in 1996, an Expos affiliate that went to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, moved from Albany, Georgia. That was a tremendous experience because it was such a likable team. We had six or seven guys who wound up making the major leagues, including Orlando Cabrera, who was actually the second baseman to start the season. The shortstop was a guy named Jason Camilli, who was a second-round pick and a good guy, but by no means the player that Orlando Cabrera was. And, of course, Cabrera helped the Sox and the curse of the Bambino in 04. Yep. But that particular team was loaded, and two or three pitchers who went on to success in the major leagues, including Javier Vasquez. I think the fourth outfielder, a guy by the name of Jose Macias, wound up having a pretty long big league career as utility type. Yeah. But it was a team that was brand new to this peninsula, the Delmarva Peninsula, that hadn't had professional baseball in decades. They really didn't have a college. The University of Maryland Eastern Shore was there, and there was some attachment to the Delaware schools. But, you know, they were on the other side of the Chesapeake Bay from Baltimore and D.C. You know, they were Oriole fans, but they treated this minor league base, this Class A minor league baseball team that was owned by Frank Perdue, the Chicken Man, and his partners, they treated it like it was a big league team. And they had a beautiful stadium, and it gave them an identity, and they got behind it. And the same thing with the Albuquerque Isotopes, another team that I called games for in the AAA Pacific Coast League. And you know, it was a team, the city that lost its team, the Dukes. The owner purchased a team from Calgary, Alberta. They moved down to Albuquerque. They became the Isotopes. And, you know, the fans, they were so passionate. And they were into games, minor league games, the way fans are with big league games. In minor leagues, usually, though, nobody knows. Most places you go, they don't know the standings. They don't know the records. They don't know what the players are. They're just there for a good time out and a formal night out with the family. But when I was in Albuquerque, especially in that first year, it was crazy. One of the guys that I saw that year was Adrian Gonzalez, and I will tell you that he was cooler then. In fact, the manager at one point refused to play him, which is a death wish for a minor league baseball manager, because you don't really make out the lineup card. It's the farm director and the GM of the big league team. If they want a guy to play, you know, you got to play him. And here was the number one overall pick, and he refused to play Adrian Gonzalez. Because he just didn't like his attitude and his work habits. And lo and behold, he wanted to get back to AA. So this was in 2003. And I got a sneak preview of what Red Sox fans would get a chance to see much later on. But there's so many parts of it, so many minor league baseball announcers. And I know I'm going on and on and taking up too much time. I
just want to say, it's okay.
Getting to the Super Bowl as a broadcaster, especially that first one, and thinking about what it took to get to this point, I think one of the best things about that experience for me is just thinking about all the people that offered encouragement along the way or helped me to reach that point. So many of them were these people in small towns in the Midwest, like Peoria, or the Southeast, or Mid-Atlantic, like Salisbury, Maryland, home of Delmarva, or Frederick, Maryland. And the fans there that were members of the Booster Club, and they were at the ballpark every night, and they lived and breathed and ate and slept, the Shorebirds or the Frederick Keys. And you think about those people and what an experience that was, and how much I should have appreciated it then. When I got to the Super Bowl, I started thinking about all those experiences and just how fortunate I was, but also, how important those people and those experiences were to allowing me to reach this point.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. I mean, I actually have a friend who's a commentator. He does. He actually works for Siena College now as the women's basketball announcer. But he did the spinners for low spinners for a summer, and he did another minor league affiliate. I think he went to school in North Carolina. It was down somewhere in North Carolina, and I'm not even sure who it was. And it was similar things that he said, about you. It's just a grind. but it's fun and people are there and they're, you know, and I subscribe to that, to the Malcolm Gladwell, you know, 10,000 hour effect where, you know, if you want to be truly great at something, you have to put a ton of time and effort into it. And, you know, and obviously being on the road with a baseball team and commentating every single night for months will do that for you. And I think, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine being, you know, being in Arizona that first year for you and just kind of being up there and being like, oh my God, I remember, you know, like you said, you know, hot nights in Peoria, Illinois, you know, and you're like, oh my God, here I am at the Super Bowl. And, you know, got to see some of the most memorable games in NFL history, you know, at this point. And so it's an interesting situation for you. And I think you have the right frame of mind from it. You're very, you know, it's not, oh my God, look at how far I've come. It's, you know, it's the appreciation of all the people that have kind of helped you along the way, which I think is pretty cool. And so, yeah, it's a great mentality to have, you know?
Well, I appreciate that, Pat. I mean, I think, you know, I know it because I've you know, been shaped and mentored by so many different people that took time to help me, whether they were, you know, professionals who were where I wanted to be someday, mentors as broadcasters, or like I say, people that were fans that just offered an encouraging word and liked the work that I did. And especially in the minor leagues, it can be a lonely pursuit. You know, you're the one guy who travels with the team who's not employed by the major league organization. You know, the trainer, the coaches, you know, they work for the big league team, the affiliate, the parent club. And you're kind of the outsider who's somewhat on the inside, but you're not a player. You're not part of the club. And yet, you know, I think about, you know, all the different people that helped me in those times, you know, flourish as a person as well as a broadcaster. And then beyond that, too, you know, there's a realization there are a lot of really talented people that don't get their shot. It took me a long time. Now, some people are natural and skyrocket up the ladder. I mean, there's the examples of Bob Costas and Joe Buck and people like that that are very young and, you know, get an opportunity and hit it out of the park at a very young age. And then there are a lot of guys that, you know, grind away for a long period of time. And finally get their shot. And then there are others who are just as good, who have put in as much work, if not more, that for whatever reason don't get that opportunity. And I'm mindful of that, and I realize that. I'm very fortunate to do what I do, where I do it, you know, for whom I do it. And there are other people out there that, you know, are doing the things that I did the right way and are doing it well, but, you know, for whatever reason, and it's not an objective industry. There's no formula. Everybody's got a different story. You know, they can't get their break. And so I realize, you know, again, that I've been a very, very lucky individual. And I also look at the league. The NFL has guys who've been around a lot longer than I have and call football just as well, if not better, that don't get a chance to call playoff games, period, let alone at least 2 years. I've had the chance to do for five years now, getting to the AFC Championship game of the Patriots in every year that I've been in the NFL to this point.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's a good point. It's a great point. And I think the attitude, as I said, you have is fantastic. All right, last question. I promise we'll wrap it up here. So for those people that may be new listeners, every time I have a guest on, I ask about their favorite or their most memorable Weekend Warrior moment. It can, if you're a new listener, you're not sure what a Weekend Warrior is, it's very simple. Weekend Warrior is someone who, you know, goes and plays a sport or does anything competitive, you know, just for the fun of it, not because they're great at it, not because they're going to make the league, not because anything else, just because it's fun. And so, you know, we've had some really interesting, you know, answers from coaching your son's baseball team to winning a spin class. And so I'm just wondering, Bob, what your most memorable Weekend Warrior moment is.
So I can't go back to the 1984 New York State baseball playoffs when Auburn High School, my team, beat Union Endicott High School near Binghamton, New York, and I had the best game of my life, at least defensively, at second base. So, you know, Weekend Warrior moments, I don't do a lot of weekend warrior activities other than try to run when I can, or I used to cross country ski a bit after moving up to New England, but now with young kids, we don't get out too much. We do a lot of hiking with the kids, do a lot of swimming with them, go on vacations and try to be really active in those. But you know, for the most part, I'm somebody who's a plotter. I get out there and try to run my 4 or 5, 6 miles if I can. But if I go back in time, I don't know if this qualifies. I recently played in a charity golf tournament, Pat, and I am not a golfer. I've played golf 3 times in the last 10 years, the only reason I played is because they were for charity. And yep. Joe Andruzzi was one who asked me to play this year, and I did because I didn't play last year. I felt bad and had to rent clubs. And then I was asked to appear in a different tournament a week or two later for a camp for kids with special needs in Bridgewater. And I did. And I gave every one of my partners in our foursome, you know, the disclaimer, look, I'm the worst golfer, period. You know, I'm just along for the ride. You're going to have to carry us. And that was the case. I lost a ball like every other hole, but there was one hole in which I hit the 2 shots of my life, and one of them was an approach that landed, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet from the cup. Oh, and it was a bed. I can't hit a ball straight. I can't hit it in the air, and I can't hit it straight. If I hit it in the air, usually it slices off into the woods, or you know, it's a pop fly that goes about 5 feet ahead, and you know, 25 feet in the air, and 5 feet out in front. And I wound up hitting this particular shot with whatever it was, my wedge or a 9-iron. And I don't know how I did it, but I kind of bailed us out of where we were, you know, trying to get up on the green. And we do it. And, I go up on the green and a couple of guys putt and can't get the birdie. And so I go up there and stand over the ball and line it up, and I putt. And it goes into the bottom of the cup. So I had the approach, you know, to get on the green, and then yep. I finished it for the birdie. And that was it. That's all I needed to do to justify the other 17 holes that I played with those poor guys who had to endure me looking for my ball in the rough, my, you know, by borrowing balls from them, you know, just being completely unable to contribute in any other way. But that particular hole, I think it was the 14th hole at Old Scottish Links in Bridgewater. And, you know, that's like the most recent memory of any kind of even remote athletic achievement. And although some people might say that, you know, golf on the charity is not too athletic.
I will tell you what, that might be the most relatable weekend warrior moment we've had so far, because even people that are good golfers are not good. And it is, I mean, anytime you hit, I mean, that's the thing about golf, and I don't golf much either. I got 3 young kids as well. And so anytime I go out, it's like I hit like 3 to 5 good shots in a round of 18. And it just keeps you going. Like, I can't believe I just did that, you know? And hitting the approach shot like that and then burying it after all 3 guys couldn't bury it. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's like the story of your life right there. That's the, you know, it doesn't even matter how you played the other 17 holes, because for 2 shots, you were like a PGA Tour champion, you know? And it's just like, that's the coolest thing about golf for me, is that it just really is. That's what those guys do. And for you, for 2 shots, you are like Tiger Woods for 2 shots, and it doesn't matter that you were the worst golfer ever for the other 17 holes. For 2 shots, it was like, I'm a pro, you know? And there's no better feeling in the world than that. It's awesome.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you give yourself, you give the pump of the fist, right? And the putt goes in. And then you're immediately brought down to earth when you have to get out of the tee.
You slice the hell out of your t-shirt, and you're like, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. But, you know, they say about golf, and I'm sure you've heard it a million times as I have, that you know, it's a sport where, you know, there's always one shot that brings you back or makes you think you can play this game and get it someday. And,
exactly.
You know, for me, I had two because I didn't have one on the previous tournament that I referenced. I don't think I had any in that particular tournament. So, you know, I've had 2 in 10 years, and then they happen to be on the same hole.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, it still counts. It still counts. And those guys are like, wow, what a shot that was. You know, someone could just watch you for those 2 shots and be like, this guy's a great golfer. You know, and it just forget about everything else. Just those 2 shots. You know. But that's
yeah, and I'll share one other quick one for you. This is this is my other weekend worry. This is the true depiction of me as an athlete, Pat. I was running. We were vacationed in Maine, my wife and my kids, and I went out for a run on the beach and got out a few couple of miles, and there was a very small jetway, but it was a jetty that was the rocks were not big boulders or you typically find. There were a lot of very small, jagged rocks. And I, for some reason, decided that I was going to take a walk out there to get – I had my phone with me and I was listening to music on it. There's a really cool picture there. So I tried to walk out on these rocks, and they were covered with this film of algae. And my running shoes, because I was wearing shoes on the beach, and you know, the bottoms were wet to begin with. And sure enough, I got out there about halfway and slipped and fell, and got up, and my right forearm was all bloodied. My knees were bloodied. Somebody said, "Hey, are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm okay." And I was so embarrassed because I actually had a sports ball cap on. I said, "I don't want anybody to know who I am." And I ran back and I got back to the house and blood was coming out and. You know, that was my warrior moment because, you know, I gutted it out and I got back, although I was a complete klutz and had a total fool of myself just for even thinking he could go out there. My wife, as soon as I got back, they go, "What were you thinking?" And I said, "Well, you know, there was a really, really cool picture of the way the sun was coming up and just the glare off the water and the edge of those rocks." And said, "You know how many stories begin with, I was trying to get the perfect shot and don't end well."
Yeah.
So. That's more like the Bob Sosi on the weekend trying to be a warrior.
It's the things we do for Instagram, right? It's just, you know.
Right, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, we've been there, too. I'll tell you what, that's pretty relatable, too, because we've all been there, that's for sure. So, well, listen, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. Now, before you go, just tell everyone, you know, where they can interact with you, obviously they can see you this Thursday and listen to you on the radio, but, you know, where else can they find you?
Yeah, that was obviously 98.5, the Sports Hub. Once the regular season begins, I'll be on a couple of different shows during the week, Kutcher and Rich, Felger and Maz, and you know that I will write as well for the website. Important to note that. I do some podcasting for Patriots.com as well and do some of the work on the Pats team website. And then I also occasionally tweet things out, and often not necessarily related strictly to the Patriots, but at Bob Sosi, it's BobSocci. And just try to, especially during the season, give fans a little glimpse of what it's like to be on the road with us. And when we go to various stadiums around the league, give you a look at, what it's like, the view from the booth. And have a Facebook page as well, which I need to do a much better job of updating in the future. But the best way is just to follow me on Twitter, at Bob Sosi.
Okay, great. I tell you, the interviews with Felger and Maz on Fridays are – they can't miss. They are appointment radio. It's just great because you guys have a good rapport together, and you're always dumping on those two of them, and it's just – it's great. It's awesome. It's a lot of fun.
As was this. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And I love your attitude and, you know, your humbleness and what you bring to the table, I think is great. And keep doing a good job. And again, not only, you know, a great commentator, but a great person. And I appreciate you coming on the show.
Pat, I appreciate that. And it's always nice to do these kind of things with people that care so much about the team. Because I know without the fans, we don't get a chance to do what we do. But I especially enjoy the opportunity to talk in a podcast like yours because I recognize how much you put into it. And I've seen you out at the stadium for events there with, I think, your son and your daughter at separate events. So this has been a great experience for me. I had my signals crossed the last time we were scheduled to do this, but I'm glad we had a chance to finally do it.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. So thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. And have a great year, all right?
Thank you, Pat.
All right, take care. All right, that was a great interview. Once again, I want to thank Bob for coming on. He's just a wonderful, wonderful person. And, you know, as I said to him, I mean, I'm not blowing smoke. I think he does a great job on the radio calls. And I really enjoyed him, Zoe, and Nink doing the TV broadcast. You know, you also mix in the PFW guys there as well. And I think they all kind of combined to do a really good job last Thursday. Obviously, they were on this Thursday and the next 2 weeks after that. And they'll be back on the radio. But again, want to give a quick shout out to him. Awesome, awesome interview. And I really appreciate him coming on. Before I get into this week in sports history and the 3-minute drill, I do want to remind you about Beard Brand. Now, you might say to me, Pat, I don't need a beard. I don't need beard stuff. It's the summer. You know, I'm not growing a beard right now. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, bro. They got the utility balm. They coming out with the utility bar now. They have great stuff for you, whether you have a beard or not. And the fall and winter are coming. You know you're growing a beard in the fall and winter. So you're going to need their stuff anyways. I'm telling you, check out Beard Brand. Because they're not just for your beard. They're a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. All right, so let's get into that 3-minute drill. It's a pretty talked about thing right now, and I just kind of want to give my 2 cents. And so here we go.
And now for something a little different.
Check, check, check. 3-minute drill. 3-minute drill, son.
Here's the deal, okay? You're going to sit here and tell me that you can't lower your head and connect with another guy. This is football, okay? This is football, all right? Now, clearly here I'm talking about the new leading with the head rule. And in theory, I like the idea, okay? You're trying to eliminate head injuries as much as you can. You're trying to limit them as much as you can. And I understand that. And I get that. And I would almost commend the NFL for doing that, except for the fact that they're hiding behind this rule to show everyone, hey, look at us. We care. We care about player safety. We actually do care. No, you don't. You don't care at all about player safety, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. And so for me, it's almost an insult to the fan when we watch the game and we're saying, that's a regular football play. That call on that Arizona safety, and I'm sure you've seen the clip by now if you're on Twitter at all. If you're not, you can go on and find it. A bunch of people have retweeted and talked about it. Match Adams has been on it since day one. Since the day they came out with that rule, he's been talking about how horrible it's going to be and how much it's going to impact the season and the way the game is played. And he's been all over it, and so it's on his timeline kind of all over the place. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I mean, guy catches a pass over the middle. The the Arizona safety comes up and makes a good hit on him. Leads with the shoulder. Doesn't hit the guy in the helmet. Doesn't hit him with his helmet. But he dropped his head when he made the tackle, because how else are you going to make the tackle? And so he does that, and they flag him for a 15-yard penalty. And it's just like, you've got to be kidding me. It's embarrassing is what it is. And it's turned the sport into a spectacle now. And again, like I said, this isn't the NFL caring about player safety. The NFL does not care about player safety. We know that. We understand that. You can't trick us into thinking that. You can't fool us by saying, oh, well, look at this. We created this. No, we know you don't care. It doesn't matter. You know, make the players sign waivers if you really want, you know, to be gone with all of the, you know, the lawsuits and everything else. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a joke. And again, it makes a mockery of the game that we all love and love watching. And, you know, for the players, they don't know what they're supposed to do. For the coaches, they've been teaching them, keep your head up. But when you drop your shoulders, your head naturally drops a little bit. And to get flagged for a 15-yard penalty for that is ridiculous. The interesting thing for me is I haven't seen it called on the offensive player yet. Here we go. Here's our timer. I haven't seen it called on an offensive player yet. And that's going to be interesting to me, because theoretically, a running back comes through the hole and he's going to take a big hit and he drops his shoulder and his head comes with him, that should be a penalty. And it hasn't been called yet. Now, it's only 1 week of the preseason, so I guess 1 week in a game. And I haven't seen that called yet. But that's going to be the interesting thing. If it's a running back hitting the hole and there's three guys there and he drops his shoulder, is that going to be a penalty? And that's kind of the question that I have. And then we all kind of have, I would guess. We'll see what they do. I mean, it's ridiculous is what it is. And that rule needs to be scrapped immediately, if not sooner. All right. So let's get on to this week in sports history. Marcus, take it away.
And now for something we think you'll really like. This week in sports history.
All right. So my first one's not exactly sports, but it still counts. August 15th, 1945, Japan announces its surrender to the Allied forces in World War II. Now, this wasn't officially signed until September 2nd, but it signaled the end of the war for, you know, everyone that was in it, for America, for everybody else. So even though it wasn't officially signed on August 15th, it signaled that the end of the war was here, and everyone was happy for another, like, 10 years until we went into Korea, but that's a whole different story. So let's move on to August 15th, 1970. Patricia Palinkas is the first woman to ever play professional. I know you can't see me because this is a podcast, but I am doing the air quotes. Professional football. She signed a contract with the Orlando Panthers of the Atlantic Coast Football League, which some people say is semi-pro, but people will tell you that it was a professional league, and so technically she did play professional football. She was actually a holder for her husband, who was the kicker. Pretty interesting. She appeared in a few preseason games. Her husband hurt his leg and he couldn't really kick anymore, and so he was cut. She stayed on the team. They were going to try to market her a little bit. Didn't work out. She ended up leaving. She did cause a little bit of a stir, though. One of the players apparently said he wanted to break her neck on one play, literally went after her on a field goal attempt. And literally said, his quote was, I wanted to break her neck. He was unsuccessful, obviously, thankfully. And the commissioner of the league actually threatened to block her contract if she tried to play in regular season games, which is nuts. But, you know, nevertheless, she was the first woman, but there actually was another woman that signed a contract with, again, another, you know, not semi-pro, but another, you know, professional team, but... you know, no one necessarily specific. And I think that was like recently in the past few years. She's a kicker. So if I cared enough, I'd look up her name, but I'm not going to. So there you go. You can find it on your own if you want. So and then the last one is August 14th, 2016. Usain Bolt becomes the first man ever to win the 100-meter dash three times with a 9.81 in Rio de Janeiro. So pretty impressive there. I don't know how long it could run in 9.81, but it's probably be about maybe 50 yards, maybe. I doubt it, but maybe, you never know. It's possible. So, anyways, that's all I got. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Again, huge thank to Bob Soucy for coming on the show. You know, it's really kind of a treat to hear them and kind of see them on the TV. I thought Nick did a great job, and you know, I like Bob and Zoe's relationship anyways. And when they flash the PFW guys, you know, Perillo and Hart in there, I think they really do a good job too. And so it's kind of interesting to hear what they have to say kind of in real time. They're obviously talking about, you know, players that are there, but they can also react to the game that are going on. And so I think that that's an interesting situation as well. So I think that it's definitely worth the watch. If you haven't seen it, the second game is Thursday night. So definitely check it out. And they'll obviously be doing it the whole preseason. Also want to thank Marcus from the Boxers Podcast for the intro song and the two cuts in the middle. Him and Wesley do an awesome job reviewing movies on Mondays. It's a spoiler-free movie review, and they actually did Ready Player One this week, which was pretty good. So and they do a good job anyway. So definitely check them out if you haven't already. Also, big thanks to MDOT and Core for the outro song. And again, check MDOT out. He's everywhere. And he's headlining a huge show pretty soon. So out in Europe somewhere. You can't catch him around here. But if you live in Europe and you're for some reason listen to my American football podcast and you're out in Europe, go check them out. And yeah, and that's it for me personally. On Twitter, I am at WTP Lane. I'm also at Weekend War Pod. That's obviously the podcast. No E's in weekend. So just WKNDWARPOD. Okay, so check that out. If you can, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It helps. It just helps. Every rating, every review helps. You know, the more people rate it, the more people review it, you know, the more people see my show. And like I said, if you're a listener and you enjoy listening to the show and you like what I have to say, interact with me on Twitter. You know, let's talk some sports. Let's talk some football. Let's talk some baseball. There's baseball going on right now. Whatever it is, let's talk something. Okay. Again, you know, this is why I'm doing this, just because I enjoy talking sports. And so, you know, reach out and talk. I'd love to chat with you. So anyways, thanks for following along. I really appreciate it. And I will talk to you not next week, because it's a special week this week. I got two shows this week. So this one's coming out Wednesday morning. Tomorrow morning, there'll be another show in the inbox for you. You'll have to, you know, in the download box, whatever the hell, whatever it is. I don't know. I don't know what it's called. It's not an inbox, but whatever it's called, the downloadable podcast thing. There you go. The queue, perhaps. My fantasy football draft special with a bunch of guys from Eat Sleep Fantasy. I got Dale coming on. I got Austin coming on. I got Steve coming on. And I got John coming on. So the five of us are going to talk fantasy football. You do not want to miss it. So that's going to be tomorrow morning, Thursday morning. That thing's coming out. So definitely check that out. And I will talk to you tomorrow.
Simmons, no timeouts. You got to go. Williams, three. Yes! You'll need to tune in. This is the show, bro. Put the game upside down like a strobe globe. Freaking Warriors. It's a podcast. What you call a commentary? Can I call trash?
Warriors, come out to play.
We can Warriors. It's a podcast. What you call a commentary? Can I call trash?
Hey, yo.
WTP. We Warriors, especially on the weekend. Looking for that sports talk. This is where it be, man. Breakdowns on your favorite teams and all that. Hear about the starters long before the ball snap. You can call Pat or go ahead and call Mike, cause we here all night. No time to stall, right? 2 seconds left, clutch shot, it's go time. Knuckles on the O-line, watch the losers go wine.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get a minute, I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell. Kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm patting this mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance. Buddy, it's radio talk, so turn it up. When it's on, we're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors,
you'll need to tune in. This is the show, bro.
This call is being recorded.
All right, so we'd like to. I'm gonna try that again because that was terrible.